Welcome to episode 42 of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. My name's Ashwin and I'll be your host for this week. After an outstanding tour of Australia where India won both the Test Series and the ODI Series for the first time in the team's history travelling to Australia, the team now moves on to New Zealand to play a 5 ODI and 2 T20 match series against the very, very strong New Zealand side who've just come off the back of an exceptional win against Sri Lanka. So this week, to try to get some more insights into the New Zealand game, we're bringing to you two very interesting special interviews. For the first one, I had a chance to connect with Adam and Rick, who are hosts of the Cricketeers podcast based in Hamilton, New Zealand. They're very excited about the New Zealand team's performance recently and their chances against a strong Indian side. Apologies in advance for the audio quality. This was done over landline, several oceans away from the US to New Zealand. So hopefully you enjoy the interview. All right, so joining us this week on the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast, we have two very special guests who run the Cricketeers podcast coming out in New Zealand. As you guys know, India starts playing New Zealand in a few days. So joining me today are Adam Bell and Rick Topham, all the way from New Zealand. Gents, thank you for joining me on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Obviously, with a big India-New Zealand series coming up, we have lots of questions. One of the things I actually said, which I never expected I would say, is when India's playing Australia and then playing New Zealand back-to-back, I'm probably personally more excited about the New Zealand series than I was about Australia, just because of how good both the sides are. So can you talk to us a little bit about the vibe in the New Zealand cricket scene? How are people feeling ahead of the India tour? And it's 5 ODIs and 2 T20s, so it's a pretty long series.
I think the vibe in New Zealand at the moment is very positive. We've just come off a 3-0 series win against Sri Lanka a few weeks ago. We feel that at the moment we've got a lot of depth in our squad and a lot of different areas. I mean, thinking about our bowling lineup at the moment, we've for the first time probably in our history, we've got a great stock of young fast bowlers coming through. We've got all-rounders and Bades at the moment. One of our, issues has been our 5, 6 and 7 over the last couple of seasons in a series against Sri Lanka. That part of our batting lineup really came through. Jimmy Neesham, who was recalled into the New Zealand side and had a fantastic series. You're looking at our middle order batsmen at the moment. You've got Kane Williamson, who's one of the best batsmen in the world. Ross Taylor, who since 2015 has been the second top run scorer in one-day cricket behind Virat Kohli. We've got one of the great one-day batsmen opening the batting in Martin Guptill. So at the moment, the vibe in New Zealand is really, really good. We're really excited to have a strong Indian side come over here. Look, the Australian side, to be fair, we're missing some key players, but in the end, India comprehensively beat the Australian side, and in particular, looking at that Indian side and the re-emergence of Mahendra Singh Dhoni over the last couple of seasons, he hasn't been quite in the same form in one-day cricket, and it was great to see him back firing on all cylinders.
That's great. Yeah, I think you covered a lot, and I want to dig deeper into a couple of the areas. So let's start unpeeling a little bit about the batting. I think the top four, it seems like, is going to be Guptill, Williamson at 3, and then Ross Taylor at 4. Who are you thinking slots into that second opener slot? Do you think Colin Munro has it nailed down, or is there any competition for that slot?
I think at the moment, Colin Munro does have that spot nailed down. The Black Caps management seem to want to have an aggressive opening partner with Martin Guptill. Look, it's fair to say that Colin Munro's run production over the last few seasons as an opener hasn't been great. In one-day cricket, he's averaging around 25 with a bat. He does have a great strike rate. A lot of New Zealand fans know how good he can be in the T20 format. So for a lot of us, it's about seeing whether he can actually transfer that T20 form into one-day cricket. In terms of other options, I think at this late stage, we don't really have a lot of options to go to. George Werger has been there or thereabouts. He's played around 8 one-day games or so. Hasn't been overly successful in the one-day game, but he's got a great list day record in domestic cricket in New Zealand. There could be, obviously, the thought of maybe pushing someone like Tom Latham up the order to open with Martin Guptill, but again, you know, Tom Latham has been tried as an opening batsman for New Zealand and hasn't, again, set the world on fire, although his stats outside of New Zealand as an opener are actually very good. But it's whether he can complement Martin Guptill with that power game. And I think with the New Zealand structure of the batting lineup, it's about trying to get off to a really fast start. Colin Munro can get the team off to the runner ball or plus runner ball starts, and that's what we need. And it gives Martin Guptill a bit of time to get himself in, and it allows Kane Williamson and Ross Taylor as well to take their time in the middle stages. And over the last few years, they've been two of the best batsmen in one-day cricket at just managing that middle stage of a one-day game.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. I think as Indian fans, before this Australia series when we were struggling to figure out what is the solution for that number four spot. I think we have probably one of the best top three batting lineup in the world, but that number four, five slot, we've been struggling with a little bit. Watching Ross Taylor and his ability to consolidate, build in innings, just stay calm and accelerate as soon as he needs to, has just been incredible to see. So I'm very envious of that number four slot you have. We're hopeful that Dhoni can continue the Australian form he had. I want to just ask you a little bit about Jimmy Neesham. So you talked a little about the 5-6-7. If anybody who's heard our show before knows, all three of us who host Edges and Sledges together are all Delhi Daredevils fans, and we're pretty big fans of the IPL. And the two New Zealand names before we had Vittori and things like that, where Jimmy Neesham played for Delhi, I think he played four or five games, didn't really make an impact. And last season, Colin Munro also played for Delhi. So we are all secretly kind of hoping Munro does really well during the IPL, gets rid of all his form, and then going into the World Cup is strong. That's the hope. But coming back to Jimmy Neesham, I don't know if, at least from my perspective, I've seen him make this big an impact over the last few years. And just watching him in that one match against Sri Lanka, he was playing on a different level. How positive are you feeling? And is there a home for a Colin de Grandhoom in your lower order, or is it Neesham's spot?
Yeah, look, I think Jimmy Neesham, to be honest, is now the spot. Even though he's going to be out for the first three one-day matches due to injury. Look, he was fantastic against Sri Lanka. There's been a bit of a question mark about, obviously, his bowling, and I think he's really worked hard on that aspect of his game. He doesn't seem to be falling over as much these days, so he's bowling a lot straighter than previous seasons. And a lot of times especially early on in his one-day career, he was tending to angle the ball down the leg side. And I think it seems like he's gained a bit of a yard of pace. He's bowling with a lot of aggression in the one-day series against Sri Lanka. In terms of him as a cricketer, look, he's a confidence player, and he was actually dropped from the Otago side last season, and he made a move to Wellington, and that's really reinvigorated his career, and he just seems like he's on another level. And like with any player, you give them a bit of confidence and a bit of support, and they can really show their true colours. Look, for me, he was blamed unfairly after New Zealand's exit in the 2017 Champions Trophy. Look, he didn't have a great series, but for me, he has made a bit of a scapegoat. And then since then, he didn't play any one-day cricket until the series up against Sri Lanka. And so I think he's a guy that is just really in the element at the moment. He seems positive. And look, I think it's going to be a massive, massive month for him once he gets back into the Black Cap side. In terms of Colin de Grandhoom, look, it's interesting because he had a really good series against Pakistan a season ago. And he actually led New Zealand to a victory at Seddon Park in Hamilton when New Zealand were in all sorts of trouble. He came out and played an absolute blinder of an innings. But I guess it's whether you can fit two all-rounders in the side. I don't think his bowling is necessarily suited for one-day cricket at the moment. He's more around the 125k an hour, just trundling it down, trying to keep it tight. And I'm not sure whether that kind of style of bowler in this day and age is, I guess, really needed or can be successful, especially on pitches in England, which should be roads come June, July next year.
Yeah, fair enough. I want to come back and ask you a couple of questions. You mentioned Neesham's role in Otago for the Super Smash. So I want to ask you about the Super Smash. But just before that, really quickly on the bowling, I think, for somebody who's not as close to New Zealand cricket, how do you see the bowling lineup shake out for both the India series and then obviously previewing up to the World Cup? I know on your last show, you guys talked a little about Southee and Bolt and their role, but obviously there's been lots of game time for Matt Henry, Lachie Ferguson. I think the spinner slot is pretty solidly nailed down for Ish Sodhi, but how do you think about the three or four quicks in the side and who's gonna be the lead strike bowler for the next 6 months?
Hi, this is Rick Topham here. I think in terms of the quicks, the two informed quicks now are Trent Bolt and Lachie Ferguson. And so for the it will be interesting for the India series how many games Tim Southee actually plays. He's somewhat down the pecking order, although I think he'll be in the World Cup squad. It will be interesting to see what the selection is for the first one day. We'll probably play three quick bowlers, and Bolt and Ferguson, I think, are certainly number one and two. East Sodhi seems to have got his confidence back, is actually bowling pretty well, and I think a very key part of this series is going to be the contest between East Sodhi, backed up by Mitchell Santner as an all-rounder, and of course the couple of Indian leggies who both bowl very well against Australia. What sort of form do you think those two leggies are in?
I mean, it's just been outstanding. I think the challenge for us is, how do you slot both of them into the side? Because no matter how you look at the statistics, when they play together, they up each other's game. And when you have room for just the one full-time spinner, they don't seem to perform just quite as well. So I think we are fortunate to have two leg spinners. Leggies are a rarity, and to have two world-class ones in the side at once is an outstanding feat. So really, really lucky to have them. I hope we can find the composition that allows them both to play.
I think with New Zealand, in terms of their fast bowling stocks, it's also trying to find someone to bowl at the death, and that's been a little bit of a weakness for the Black Caps over the last couple of seasons or so. But Lachie Ferguson has come on leaps and bounds over the last couple of years. I mean, he's averaging around 25 with the ball in one-day cricket. At one stage in his one-day career, his RPO was over 7 and over, and he's really brought that down over the last couple of years. And in the last season or so, he's developed really good variations, as shown against Sri Lanka. And there was in the first one-day international Pereira was in, Kulshal Pereira, not Tulshan Pereira. And Sri Lanka were in a good position, and they could have kicked on and possibly put some pressure on at the Black Caps and at the end of the match. But one of the great things with Lachie Ferguson in that particular over, he really bowled some great variations, bowled some great slower ball bounces, and it really confused Kulshal Pereira before getting him out. So it just shows you that he's not just all 150 km plus. He can actually mix his pace up. And also in the recent one-off T20 match against Sri Lanka at Eden Park, again, Sri Lanka and were going great guns. They were probably looking odds on to win the game with Pereira in, smashing the ball around the park. Again, in this over, Lachie Ferguson came back. He mixed his pace up. He bowled superbly well. And again, swung the match for New Zealand. And it just shows you for me that his development over the last couple of years has been immense. And he's possibly now behind Trent Bolt as the leading bowler in our one-day side. In terms of where Tim Southee is at the moment, look, he's struggled over the last couple of years. I mean, his average is kind of blowing out a little bit and hasn't quite been as effective with the white ball as he has been with the red ball. And so I guess that slot is possibly open. It depends on how New Zealand structure their bowling lineup. I'm not sure whether Lachie Ferguson is seen as being an opening bowler at this stage. He's really effective in that middle stages. So if it is, say for example, in the World Cup, if we do play two spinners in the lineup, one seamer will have to miss out. And it'll be interesting to see which seamer does miss out, because I think on form it would be Southee. But then, you know, who opens the bowling with Trent Bolt if New Zealand go down the two spinner option? So, you know, lots of questions to be answered, I guess, in the next few weeks or so.
Yeah, I think the luxury of fast bowling all-rounders, whether it's Nisham or Colin de Grandhomme, that's something as Indian fans we are incredibly envious of. We have the one, and he's not playing at the moment. And so I think we've all been saying if they're a young Indian batsman who can bat at 7 and bowl, you know, 10 overs at 130 plus, we need to be fast tracking them to the side. And New Zealand has a wealth of those. So that's fantastic. I want to pick your brain a little about the leader himself, Kane Williamson. There's been a lot of talk about him over the last 3 to 5 years, especially in India. We see a lot of him as the skipper of the Sunrisers Hyderabad. And he just was the anchor. I mean, I remember thinking there's no way in a structure where there's four overseas players and you have Warner and you have a couple of quicks and you have a lower order all-rounder, there's no way Williamson would make the side. And in the last few years, he's just upped his game, not just as a tactical thinker, but also as a T20 batsman, which I don't think many of us expected 5 years ago. So just how critical has Williamson been for the New Zealand side, both as a batsman and a leader?
Absolutely critical. He's brought his own style to leadership, distinct calmness. And in terms of his one-day game particularly, he has really developed the ability to work the ball around, using the wrists a lot, etc. And so he's not really a power player, as I think you touched on. And I think a lot of people in New Zealand probably felt the same 3 or 4 years ago, that he was going to struggle to be a really good T20 player, okay, and also scored a real click, towards the end of a one-day game. But he's just got such a range of shots, almost the best in the world, I think, and just this ability to play so few dot balls. He knows where the gaps are, okay, and can always at least push a one. But he's very, very effective at finding the gaps and finding the boundary. So a very, very big influence, and his leadership is massively respected in New Zealand.
Yeah. And it's his calm demeanor, isn't it? Under pressure, he never seems flustered at all.
Yep.
And he's a different personality from what Brendan McCullum was. I mean, Brendan McCullum was obviously a bit more extroverted, a bit more brash, a bit more of a risk taker. And I think it took New Zealand fans a little while to just warm to this different approach from Kane Williamson, and we got used to Brendan McCullum and his style. But look, everybody's different, and what they bring to the table is different. And I think Kane Williamson has a different element to Brendan McCullum. He's calmer. He's confident and in a different type of way. He backs his own ability, but he's not necessarily out there with that. So I think what he does is give the group a quiet confidence, and you can kind of see that and how that's developed over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because as Indian fans, we've had to see the opposite sort of transition where you went from McCullum to Williamson. We went from MS Dhoni, who was called Captain Cool, to Virat Kohli, who does sort of wear his heart on his sleeve. And we've learned to love and accept that from a leadership style standpoint. And it's just interesting to transition leadership. So really quickly, 5 ODIs coming up starting on January 23rd, I believe it is. What can we expect to see from the pitches in the 5 different ODIs?
Well, the first match has been played at McLean Park in Napier. Now, there was a Burger King Super Smash game played last night, and the pitch was an absolute road. There was over 400 runs scored. Tom Latham smashed 100 off around, I think it was 50-odd balls last night. So I think the batting pitches will be very good. I was at the Mount for the Mount Maunganui at Bay Oval for 2 one-day internationals against Sri Lanka, and the pitches there were very flat. In the first one-day match, New Zealand made 370, and the second match made 330. So I think it's going to be a very high-scoring series.
Do you think the Super Smash has played a role in generating sort of big hitters? And I mean, I don't remember having seen New Zealand cross 300-plus consistently in the early 2000s, say. And I mean, arguably you could say that for most sides. But do you, I mean, we feel the IPL has probably brought more big hitters to the forefront. Do you feel the same for the Super Smash, or do you think it's more reaction to teams like India and England scoring those big scores that New Zealand has upped their game as well?
I think it's a combination. Yes, to some extent, England have shown the way. They actually, interestingly, decided after the 2015 World Cup to go home and sort of play the New Zealand Brendan McCullum led no fear way. And to be honest, they do it extremely well, which is why they're now ranked number one and are favourites for a World Cup. I think in terms of New Zealand, it's a combination of the two. It's a Super Smash, and of course we have quite a bit of representation in the IPL, which I think obviously leads the way in terms of franchise T20 cricket, and probably always will. So all of the New Zealand players have added additional shots. The standard T20 shots, the ramps, etc., to their game. And I presume it's the same with the Indian players. They've all, however much class they might have, had to add the additional T20 shots.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And that's how the game has evolved. And it's nice to see that spread across countries. And I also realized I talked about Colin Munro playing for the Delhi Daredevils, and they're my side, so I'm close to them. But we also have Trent Bolt, who had a pretty good season last year. So even just in my own side, we have heavy representation from New Zealand players. So that's great. All right, gents, before we wrap up, I want to ask you to make 2 predictions on the record, and we'll revisit to see how you did. First off, 5 ODI series, India versus New Zealand. What is the scoreline going to be? Let's start with you, Adam.
I think New Zealand will edge India out 3-2. I think it's going to be a very exciting series. I think it's going to be closer than 2014. Look, I think India this time around have improved a lot. And Virat Kohli, I think, and Sharma are on another level to what they were in 2014. I mean, Virat Kohli's form in the last couple of seasons in ODI cricket has been incredible. And we all know what Rohit Sharma's done in the last few seasons, scoring double centuries in one-day cricket. I also think New Zealand's also got better in a few areas as well. I mean, obviously, Ross Taylor in the since 2015 World Cup, averaging around 90 in one-day cricket. And we've got Kane Williamson with him. Those two guys are two of the best batsmen in one-day cricket at manipulating and managing the middle stages of a one-day game. We've obviously got the class of Martin Guptill up top. And then with our bowling lineup at the moment, Trent Bolt, since the 2015 World Cup, has just emerged as one of the best one-day bowlers in the world. And he really made himself in the one-day game in that particular tournament, because leading up to that tournament, guys like Mitchell McLenahan was actually played ahead of Bolt. So Bolt really just came through and made himself a permanent fixture in the one-day side. So I think both sides are very strong this time around. I think the difference with India as well is they've got, and we've touched on this, 2 incredibly good spinners. Not taking away anything from Jadeja or Ashwin, they are very good spinners in their own right, but these two guys that they're bringing over, Chahal and Kuldeep, I mean, these guys are masters in white ball game, and I think that's the big difference for me from 2014. And for me, the key will be to see how New Zealand's middle order can cope with the Indian spinners. And also be interesting to see whether the pitches suit the Indian spinners as well, whether they can get the same kind of purchase as what they do at home. But I'm going to go 3-2 New Zealand. One bold prediction I will make, I think Brad Coley will score 100 in the series. There you go.
I think, I don't know if I'd say that's bold. He's made 9 in his last 19 innings, 20 innings now. So I think you're just playing the odds game there. Just for any of our listeners who may have wiped it from their memories, just a reminder, Adam's referring to 2014. That was the last time India toured New Zealand, and it was a 5 ODI series, and New Zealand won that one 4-0. So 3-2 would be an improvement for us, but I'm hoping it can get even better than that.
My prediction, and I've come to the same conclusion as Adam, but totally independent. I think 3-2 New Zealand. I agree with Adam. I think the real contest is the middle order batsmen for the Black Caps against the Indian leg spinners. I just think that the New Zealand batsmen are in such good form, okay, and we basically put an average of 351 on the board in the Sri Lankan series across the three games. I think the extra 60 or 70 runs that the pitches should be able to produce in New Zealand compared to Australia. I think our batting is just a little bit stronger for New Zealand conditions. Not necessarily saying that would be the case, certainly in India or even in England for the World Cup. But I really think that is the major battle. As I say, our middle order against your two leggies. I really will be interested to see if India decide, certainly late in the series, to play two leggies. Historically, New Zealand have not played leggies well, but I think we've got a lot better at that in the last couple of years. So very, very interesting contest. It could easily be 3-2 the other way.
And India don't have Bumrah as well, and he's a massive loss. Like, he's one of the best bowlers in one-day cricket, and in particular at the death as well. So he's going to be a massive loss.
I think it's a big loss, but I think we all feel it's probably the right call, just given his heavy workload. He's now our leading bowler across all three formats, and so just trying to keep him for the World Cup, resting him for this series after the heavy test series workload he had against Australia, I feel pretty good. And he's young, right? So he tends to put in more overs than the other quicks as well, so I'm a fan of having rested him. Second quick prediction I was just going to ask you for is, how far do you think New Zealand's going to make it in England this June at the World Cup?
I honestly think the World Cup final will be between England and India. And that's speaking with my head here rather than my heart. I mean, I'd love the Black Caps to win the tournament, obviously. But look, I honestly, right this minute, I can't see anything more than England versus India. I think they're the two form sides of world cricket. I think they probably have the majority of the world-class players in their side. That, right this minute, I think New Zealand will make it to the semi-finals again, unfortunately.
Yeah, that would be my prediction too. I think the interesting thing for New Zealand is that suddenly we've got two or three all-rounders coming back from injury, and New Zealand's historic strength, which won't necessarily show in this series against India, with Neesham currently injured, Santner just coming back from injury, Bracewell sort of coming back into the side, Corey Anderson is still injured, but could possibly come back in for the last couple of games. If those all-rounders are all fit and create a big selection dilemma for our coach Gary Stead, then I certainly see New Zealand getting to the semi-finals, and they would be, I think, the side that nobody really wants to play at the World Cup if we're really firing from positions from 6 through to 8. But I have to go along with Adam. I think England and India are the strongest two sides, and I would expect that to be the final.
And there's part of me that can kind of see Dhoni going out a winner. It's the narrative, isn't it? A lot of times, teams who win World Cups, there's a certain narrative behind it in all sports. And I've just kind of got this feeling that, you know, is it Dhoni's kind of last go at it, and he's going to go out a winner? I mean, he's a champion, isn't he? So yeah, I can kind of see England and India final.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's probably what a lot of us would predict. That's certainly what I hope happens. Okay, gents, we're going to wrap it up there. Really quickly, can you, if our listeners want to hear more from you or find your podcast, how can they find you?
Through iTunes. We do have a Facebook page, which is The Cricketeers, or alternatively on iTunes as well, under Cricketeers NZ.
That's perfect. Thank you very much for taking the time today. DJ Varun and myself, who hosts the show together, are all actually going to be at the India-New Zealand game in the World Cup. That was the one of the two matches we got tickets for. So we will be there. Maybe we'll try to talk to you guys right before or right after that game and see how that one goes.
Yeah, I'd love to. I might even be over there for that game. So
maybe we can sync up and have a beer.
Yeah, it'd be great.
That sounds great. Thanks for the time today.
No worries. Thanks, Ashwin.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll take a quick break now and be right back with the second half of episode 42 of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. As you all know, all three of us who podcast on our show live abroad but support the Indian cricket team. So now for the second part of our show, in light of Virat Kohli's recent comments about supporting India if you live in India, we thought it would be fun to have a chat with somebody who does live in India but supports another cricket team. DJ did this interview, so without further ado, I'll let him introduce our guest for the second half of the show, Malhar.
Today we're joined by Malhar Hathi, a long-term listener and supporter of our podcast. He lives in Mumbai and is the cricket editor of the UK-based website Last Word on Cricket. Today, he's going to be talking to us before the upcoming New Zealand versus India series. So, Malhar, just talk us through how you got interested with associate cricket as well as New Zealand cricket.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A lot of people ask me that question. I think I'm in a good space to answer that. First of all, being a cricket fan, I think I've understood the game because I was following India a lot. I think it all happened in the 2015 World Cup. I just saw Scotland playing one of the warm-up games against West Indies prior to the World Cup. And what I saw was that they gave West Indies a tough fight. I think they were chasing, Scotland were chasing somewhat around 313 and they fell short by just 3 runs. So I thought, you know, maybe this is a good side. You know, I should follow them a little bit. So it was, they were kind of a lesser known entity at a global stage. So their brand of cricket was really exciting and that caught me by surprise. And they also gave tough fights to New Zealand and they just lost to Afghanistan by a whisker. So I think that's when it all started and I haven't looked back since. Recently, they defeated Afghanistan and England in one of the ODIs. It's been, you know, a good journey for them. It's been good fun.
Awesome. And what about New Zealand? How did you get involved with the Kiwi cricket team and how did you end up supporting them?
Yes, the Kiwis. I think even they had an exciting brand of cricket. You know, Brendan McCullum, he kind of changed the brand that they played in the 2015 World Cup. He was always bashing ahead of the power play scores and everything. That kind of got me interested in New Zealand. Plus, they had exciting players like Nathan McCullum, Luke Ronke, Daniel Vettori. So I think it kind of stemmed from that. So it was a lot of fun following them back then. And also, they are, I feel, the best tourists in the world. India is obviously up there. But if you look at a non-subcontinental side who plays a spin pretty well, it has to be New Zealand. They always punch above their weight. So I think it was kind of that quality that got me interested in them in the first place.
Awesome. So just talk us through New Zealand's recent results in the UAE against Pakistan. I mean, they came off a fantastic series victory. But what really stood out for you over there?
Yeah, the trip to UAE, I think it kept getting better for them because they lost the T20s, they drew the ODI series and eventually won the Test series. So there was kind of the story of the series. But I think one of the brightest spots about the series that I found very good was that Henry Nichols, he kind of proved his worth with the bat on the tour because he showed sparks of improvements on New Zealand's tour to India in 2017. But this time around, I think he freed up his mindset, he attacked more, and he developed a sound technique against the spinners. Even apart from him, I think Colin de Grandhomme, his struggles were apparent, but I think in the limited over series, he was a little good. Trent Bolt, he picked up a hat-trick. Lockie Ferguson came good with a fifer, and obviously twin 3-wicket hauls. So that was kind of a standout moment for me. The whole bowling unit came well together. So that was about it, I think.
Brilliant. So I'm going to ask you the obvious question. With the upcoming New Zealand versus India series, who's your money on and who are you going to be supporting?
It's actually a good question, but I think since I'm a Kiwi fan, come on, I'm going to be slightly biased towards them. I think it's going to be New Zealand winning it 3-2. It's going to be a keenly contested series. It's going to be, I mean, I expect a run fest because New Zealand, they have shorter boundaries. They have batting friendly pitches. A lot of runs are going to be scored. India have good batsmen. New Zealand have good batsmen. It's their home ground after all. So I think I'm going to tilt towards New Zealand here, 3-2.
So that's a big call, Malhar. So we'll have to just wait and watch. I mean, given the, I think we've mentioned this a number of times on our podcast, the crazy cricket calendar that we have. India have just finished playing on Friday in Australia and they're moving straight to New Zealand. The first ODI starts on the 23rd of January. So we're going to find out about all this pretty soon. But My memories actually of New Zealand are kind of spicy decks, green, batsmen struggling, jumping all over the place, the ball hooping around corners. You said that they'll be batting friendly pitches. Is that a conscious effort from curators in New Zealand to turn out batting friendly pitches, given that the World Cup is going to be coming up soon? And I suppose they're trying to replicate as closely as possible the conditions they'll get in England later in the summer.
I mean, I've actually talked to a couple of New Zealand cricketers who have recently plied their trade in England and Irish clubs. So they said that in terms of pitches and weather, the conditions in England kind of heavily mirror to those in New Zealand. I think, yeah, the pitches, they are batting friendly. It may be a conscious effort, but you mentioned green pitches. In the limited over series against Sri Lanka, even if you look at the first two ODIs they played at Mount Maunganui, what happened was New Zealand scored 371, Sri Lanka replied with a strong 326. So there was a batting friendly pitch. Even in the second game, the pitch had worn out a little, but Thisara Parreira's 140, I think it stood out. It was a batting friendly pitch, I would say.
Yeah, for once, Thisara Parreira was actually a person hitting the sixes, which was quite amusing. So what are your other memories of India versus New Zealand series? Because I think mine goes back to that, I think 2002, 2003 series. But what else are your kind of favorite memories from that? I know it happens quite early India time. So for me, it's always been with a cup of tea and early in the morning. But what else are your strong memories of India, New Zealand, in New Zealand?
It dates back to, I think, 2014 when India lost to New Zealand, because that was the time I think I kind of followed cricket a lot. Not before that.
We're not going to talk about that series. It was 4-0. So we've blanked it out. It's been deleted from history.
No, but I think that was the one of the only twos that I've seen India touring New Zealand. I think I have a few good memories. Actually, even I was an Indian fan back then. Now that I'm a New Zealand fan, I would want to talk about it. I think Corey Anderson, he played a key all-round role in that series. And well, there was Kane Williamson scoring 270s in the first two ODIs. And then there was Ross Taylor scoring 200s in the last two ODIs. But back then, as an Indian fan, if there was something of a bright spot, I think Ravindra Jadeja pulled off an all-round coup to tie a thriller in the third ODI. I think that was fantastic to watch.
I think this was when Ashwin got a 60-odd as well. Probably the quickest I've ever seen him bat. That is something I remember. The rest of it is a bit of a blur, I have to admit.
Yeah, exactly. I think something like that. I mean, I've always watched New Zealand touring India. In fact, I had the fortune of being at Wankhede in 2017. I was only one Kiwi fan among thousands of roaring Indian fans. Every time I cheered, there were uncles who would just stare at me because, like, why are you supporting New Zealand here? But I think that was one of the classic encounters, because Kohli got 100, Latham and Taylor put up a 200-run record partnership to win it. I think that's what we'll see in this series as well. Kohli getting runs, Taylor and Latham getting runs in the middle. I think that's going to be the story.
Yeah, that's interesting. So can I just come to you very quickly on what you think will be the key matchups for this series? I mean, Kohli versus Williamson is obviously the big one, where you've got two outstanding one-day batsmen. I mean, outstanding batsmen in all forms of the game. So what to your mind are going to be the key matchups across both teams?
Yeah, so I think first up, see, I don't have a particular matchup, like one person versus the other. But I think the first one has to be Latham and Taylor versus the wrist-spinning options of India, Chahal and Kuldeep. Because we saw it on their tour to India in 2017. They held the batting together mainly because of their capabilities to keep the spinners at bay. And obviously score off them as well. And Ross Taylor, I think he's in his prime right now. He's been averaging 81 in his last 10 ODIs. And Tom Latham, I think he sweeps pretty well. So it's going to be fantastic watching them as well. So that's one of my first ones. Latham and Taylor partnerships versus the spin of India. Because spin is India's, what do you say, strengths. One of the key strengths this time around. Because Bumrah is not there. Bhuvi is there. Bhuvi is going to be interesting to watch. That's why one of my second matchup is Colin de Grandhomme versus Bhuvneshwar. Because I feel Bhuvneshwar is a good death bowler. And Colin de Grandhomme will be looking to hit the ball out of the park in the last 10 overs. And New Zealand are pretty good at it. So I think that is one of the key matchups as well. Because, you know, death over bowling exploits will be key in the series, I feel.
Great. So it's going to be a fantastic series, as you say. But can I just come to when New Zealand go to the World Cup, what do you think their chances are going to look like? I mean, they've historically overachieved at world tournaments. I think they've done 6 semi-finals, if I'm not wrong. They did make a final last night, but there was that heartbreaking ball from Mitch Stark in the first over. Where do you see them going? Do you see them winning this year's World Cup?
I think they have a pretty good chance because Australia are pretty much out of the fray, I feel. They still aren't, what do you say, a settled unit. And I think that's where New Zealand are a settled unit because I just mentioned a while ago that in terms of pitches and weather conditions, England is very similar to New Zealand. So they don't have to worry about acclimatization and it's one of the advantages they hold over the other teams. If you speak otherwise, I think almost every player in the squad has played in the county seasons in the last year or so. And I feel they have a settled unit because, first of all, you see, they have, you look at the playing 11, they have Guptill and Munro at the top, very good openers. Then you have Williamson, Taylor and Latham in the middle order. Then there's obviously Santner coming in, Colin de Grandhomme, or maybe Jimmy Neesham. It depends on what their combination is. There's Sodhi, Saudi, Bolt, Ferguson. So I think they do have a settled unit. And if you say outside the playing 11, I think they have pretty good backups as well. Jimmy Neesham is up there.
Sometimes I almost hope Neesham isn't playing the game so you can just follow him on Twitter while the game's on. But anyway.
Exactly, yeah. But he bats better than he tweets, I feel.
Yeah, those 5 sixes in an over was incredible. And I mean, he hasn't really said anything about it. But I wonder what he would have said if he was on Twitter at that time.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, recently I read Gary Steed talk about Henry Nicholls being used as a backup wicketkeeper. I don't see the need of it, to be honest. They want to play an extra all-rounder in Jimmy Neesham. They also have one more all-rounder in Todd Astill. He's a fantastic leg spinner. I'm a big fan. He's actually one of the most underrated cricketers in New Zealand going around. He has a fantastic googly and his leg spin spins a mile. So I think they have a fixed match-winning squad of 15 and they have a settled unit. So in the upcoming series against India and Bangladesh, they just need to rotate the players and settle on a combination that suits them.
So any relation to Nathan Astill of Todd Astill? Brother, cousin, nephew?
No, I'm not aware of that.
No? Okay. Anyway, we're looking forward to it. And we've actually, the three podcasters on this podcast have all actually got tickets to the India-New Zealand game at the World Cup. So we will be going to Nottingham to watch that. So we're all kind of looking forward to that. That sounds like it's going to be a great matchup. India actually have kind of struggled against New Zealand of late. From what I remember, the last time we played them at a multilateral tournament was the 2016 T20. And we were spun out in Nagpur by the combination of Sodhi, Santner and I think Nathan McCullum actually. Yeah, so that was a pretty depressing memory for us.
Yeah, it was kind of a surprising one because it was not an easy pitch to score off and they did catch them by surprise.
Yeah, so can I just ask you about, you mentioned at the start of the segment that you thought that they were the best touring team along with India, but when they did come to India for the test matches, they were outspun. So are you a little bit disappointed that there aren't going to be any test matches in this series? And why is that? I mean, why, with New Zealand being so good at test cricket, are we not playing test matches against them?
Yeah, it is. I'm kind of gutted because test cricket could really do with some India-New Zealand. You know, there are some two good sides. New Zealand in their backyard, they are pretty fantastic. I mean, if you're playing against them, it's a big feat if you beat them. And they have good bowlers as well. Even their batting, they have BJ Watling. I'm a big fan of his. But I think the reason why we don't have any test matches this time around is because India and New Zealand both are looking at the World Cup. They feel there's no need to play any test cricket at the moment because the more number of limited over matches you play, it preps you up for the upcoming World Cup. And test cricket is not their agenda right now.
Great. So there you have it. An Indian, but is a Kiwi fan. And it's all about the World Cup. It's all about the World Cup going forward. Everyone's focused on it. And it sounds like it's going to be a cracker. I think, to my mind, New Zealand will definitely be one of the semi-finalists. And hopefully India will be there as well. And hopefully, if India can beat New Zealand, Malhar will come back to being an Indian fan.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening, but all right.
No, we'll try and get you back.
Yeah.
Anyway, Malhar, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great speaking to you. Keep listening to the podcast and we'll speak to you soon again.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this week's show. Thank you as always for joining us. Don't forget to follow us on social media at One Tip One Hand on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram as well. If you can head over to wherever you listen to podcasts and give us a rating or a review, that would be much appreciated. Enjoy the first couple games of the India-New Zealand ODI series, and we'll be back with you in about a week's time. Thanks so much.